Okay, so we are on Ham and Bees. This is officially Daf Vav this week, but we're on Ham and Bees. We're six lines up from the bottom. The last two words on the line, Rav Edi. And so we've been discussing, we went through a lot of Agadah, a lot of different stories last week as they pertain to various Pesukim and the like. And so we're going to conclude that section now with this last final story. And then after this, we're going to have a series of discussions as they pertain to various other aspects of our Mishnah. But let's just jump right in right now. So, says the Gemara, again, 8 lines up from the bottom. Rav Edi, the last two words of the line. Rav Edi Avuha de Rebbe Yaakov Bar Edi, so it's an interesting name. Rav Edi, the father of Rebbe Yaakov, the son of Edi, Hava Ragil de Hava Azil Tlasa Yarche Boorcha. He had a practice. Every single year, he would take a 3-month journey. What would he do in this 3-month journey? So if you take a look at the last Rashi, all the way up top over there on the page, Haya Ragil Mahalech Shlosha Chadashim Hayami Beso Libes Medrash. It was a 3-month walk from his house to the Beis Medrash. V'no Sami Beso Achar Pesach, and he would leave his house after Pesach. V'no Mid Yom Echad, and he would learn one day the Chozer LeBeso, and then he would go back the Sameach Hasisho Bechag Hasukos so that he can be celebrate with his wife for the holiday of Sukkot. So basically, it was a 3-month journey each way. So he was gone for a total of 6 months, I guess. And so you'd go 3 months, learn the Beis Medrash one day, then you'd come back and have the 3 months journey on the way back. So what happened to this guy? So v'chad yoma bevei rav. He was a you have some people who are 3-day a year shul goers, and so this guy was a 1-day a year Beis Medrash learner. V'havu karu le rabbanan, and that's what the rabbis called him. They called him, hey, this is the 1-day a year Beis Medrash guy. Bar be rav d'chad yoma. That's what they would call him. They would call him the 1-day a year Beis Medrash guy. Chalash date. It really troubled him. Like, why are they making fun of him? So kari anafshe. So he applied the following pasuk to himself, that it says, "Schok l're'ehu e'yeh," that I will be as one who is mocked by my friends. Amar le'Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "B'matusa minach," he says, I'm like begging of you, I'm pleading of you, "lo ta'anish l'hu rabbanan," don't punish the rabbis for saying this, and because, in other words, if you punish the rabbis for saying this, bad things are going to happen to them, because you are the one who is correct in this situation. So, says the Gemara, Nafak Rabbi Yochanan lebei medrasha v'darash. Rabbi Yochanan went out to the Beis Medrash and he gave a drasha. What does the pasuk say? V'osi yom yom yidrashun v'das darche yechafetzun. So, and yet they seek me every day and desire to know my ways. So, what is this pasuk teaching us? Right, so they're seeking Hashem. So, you seek Hashem every day. V'chi bayom dorshin oso, v'layla in dorshin oso. Does one only seek, or do these people only seek Hashem during the day and not at night? That can't be. That doesn't make any sense to say that they seek me during the day. What does this mean? El Lomar L'cha, rather, what is this pasuk teaching us? Kula osik batura afilu yom echa b'shana ma'ale alav ha'kazav ki'ilu asak kol ha'shana kula. Anyone who learns Torah for 1 day a year, the pasuk considers this guy to have learned Torah for the entire year, meaning it's all according to what you're able to do. This individual could only really technically be able to learn 1 day a year because he had a 6-month journey in total, 3 months to the Beis Medrash, 3 months back. So he'd go 1 day a year to learn Torah, and because that was the only day a year that he was really able to go learn at a Beis Medrash, so Rabbi Yochanan says about this guy that basically gets considered as if he learned Torah the entire year. So if he has one good day of learning, that could be better than someone who spends 364 days of bad learning. So that's what the pasuk says. That's what the pasuk means, and then similarly says the Gemara, v'chein b'midas paranis. This also applies to punishment as well, right? How do we know this about punishment? Because it says dichtiv. The pasuk says regarding the spies, the meraglim, b'mispar hayamim asher tirtem esaris. They spied out the land, over a matter of days, right? They spied out the land for 40 days when the meraglim were sent. V'chi arbeim shana chatu, v'lo arbeim yom chatu. Right? Wasn't it that they didn't they just spy out the land for 40 days and not for 40 years, right? But we know that they get punished by having to be in the desert for 40 years. So why is that? This is to teach us. Someone who violates an avera just for 1 day out of the year. The pasuk is basically saying that you're considered as if you violated one day of the year. It's like you violated 1 year. So therefore, the meraglim, they violated 40 days. So 40 days in each of those days is counting as a year. That means 40 years. So basically, there are some mitzvos that are so great that you do that it's as if you did it the whole year, like learning Torah for one day, if that's all you could do. And there are some sins, evidently, it's a little unclear exactly what the parameters of how bad the sin has to be for it to be counted as one entire year, for one day to be 1 year. But nonetheless, there are some sins that seem to be so bad that if you violate it just one day, then you're going to consider like you violated it the entire year. Okay, end of all these interesting stories. Says the Mishnah further, now we're the two dots in the bottom line of Hey Amid Beis. Ezehu katan kol she'enu yachol lerchov al kseifav shel aviv. There was a machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, right, regarding how we define a katan, right? So we're going to have a lot of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel today. So, but the Gemara before that says that who is a katan? How do we define someone who is not obligated to go up to bring the Karban Re'iyah? So anyone who is not able to ride on the shoulders of his father. Okay, so that's what the Mishnah says. Says the Gemara, Maskev lo Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira says, I have a problem with this. Ad hacham man asye. Look at the top Rashi on the page on Vav Amud Aleph. Ad Yerushalayim, mihi viu, right? Who brought this kid to Yerushalayim in the first place? Meaning, so it's very nice, you see that the kid has to be able to ride on the father's shoulders to get up to Har Abayis from Yerushalayim, but this kid isn't from Yerushalayim. We know that if you live anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, you have to come make Ali al Regel on one of the Chagim. So what do you mean this guy has to be able to ride on his father's shoulders to get to Har Abayis? How did the kid get to Yerushalayim in the first place? The kid lives in the up north, and so how did he get there? He clearly had to walk there. So don't tell me that this kid rode on his shoulders the whole way. So it must be. So it's right. So ad hacham man ha'asya. So how did this kid get to Yerushalayim in the first place? Amar le Abaye. Abaye says back to him, no, ad hacha de mechaiva ime besimcha. No. So getting up until this point, who helped bring the child over? It was the mother who helped. Why? Because even though the mother doesn't have an obligation to go up to Har Abayis, we said that she's exempt from bringing the Karban Re'iyah. Nonetheless, she is obligated to be in Yerushalayim, to be besimcha, to celebrate the Chag. And therefore, since she's obligated in the simcha, in the happiness of the Chag, she does have to go up with the family. So she helped. So the mother brought the kid up until Yerushalayim. Now the question is the kid going to be able to go up with the father? And what does it take to be able to go up with the father? You have to be able to ride on his shoulders. Okay, says the Gemara further. Mikan ve'ilach im yachol la'alos ulachos biyado shel aviv Yerushalayim la'har bayis chayav ve'ilo patur. Right. So from here on out, once he gets to Yerushalayim with his mother, then if he's able to go up by holding his father's hand from Yerushalayim to Har Abayis, then he's going to be obligated in the Karban Re'iyah because of chinuch. But if he's not, then he's going to be exempt. Heishiv Rebbe Tachas Beis Hillel l'divrei Beis Shammai. Now, you remember there was this machlokas in the Mishnah, right? Beis Shammai was of the opinion that says you have to be able to ride on the shoulders, and Beis Hillel says that no, you can just walk him up by hold. But more stringent that you have to be able, the kid has to be able to walk up by you holding his hand. So now, so says the Gemara after we just said that whole idea. So he shiv Rebbe Tachas Beis Hillel l'diver Beis Shammai. Rebbe answered on behalf of Beis Hillel to the words of Beis Shammai, right? What did he say? He said, V'chana lo alsa, ki amra li'isha aydi gamel ha-na'ar v'hevi osav. Why did Chana, right, Shmuel's mother, why did Chana not bring Shmuel up to Har Abayis? Because she says, Chana did not go up to Har Abayis, and she said to her husband, the Pasuk says, until my child is weaned, then I'll bring him. But before my child is weaned, I will not be able to bring him. Which means what? What do you mean, until he's weaned? Right, so a kid has to be, when he's weaned, so he could be, I guess, a three-year-old, let's say, before he's weaned. And so if that's the case, so what, the three-year-old can't ride on his father's shoulders? Right, so that's what Beis Hillel would say to Beis Shammai. Why did Chana not bring Shmuel up to Har Abayis? So Beis Hillel would say that, of course, she couldn't bring him up because they had to wait until he was like six or seven when he could hold his father's hand when they walked up to Har Abayis. Beis Shammai would have the issue over here because, according to Beis Shammai, clearly the Shmuel in this pasuk was, you know, 3 years old, and a three-year-old, in theory, could ride on his father's shoulders, so why didn't Shmuel go up? So that's a big question to Beis Shammai, right? Because it doesn't make any sense, because according to this, Chana should have had no issue letting him go up to be Aliyah Larega, because of the fact that clearly, even before he's weaned, he should be able to ride on the shoulders. Therefore, this is a proof that Beis Hillel is correct, that you have to be able to hold your father's hands, because that clearly Shmuel had not reached that point over here. Okay, it says the Gemara further, Amarle Abuha, now the father of Rav, the father of Rebbe, who just made that statement. The father of Rebbe steps in and he says, what do you mean? tikshelach chana gufa. This whole pasuk you just quoted is a big question, even according to you. What, mi lo mechayva besimcha? Is Chana herself not chayva in simcha? How did Chana not go up to Har Abayis? She herself has to go. Fine, so Shmuel can't go, but she has to go, so she had to find a way to get Shmuel to go. Right, meaning, at the end of the day, we're to understand that any family is going to go make Aliyah L'Regel to go up to Yerushalayim. That means even if you have a baby, you have to go up, because the woman is chayv. So unless you're going to find, I don't know, maybe some non-Jewish babysitter, at the end of the day, we assume that every single person, man, woman, and child, goes up to Yerushalayim, and just that the question is, what sort of a kid, at what age do you have to go up to Har Abayis with the father, because the mother is never chayv? But of course they had to go to Yerushalayim, so what does it mean Chana wasn't going to go to Yerushalayim, wasn't going to go make Aliyah L'Regel? Isn't she obligated in Simcha also? So that's a question even for Rebbe. If you're understanding the pasuk according to the simple understanding, then not only is it a question against Beis Shammai, but it's also a question against Beis Hillel, and particularly Rebbe's perspective of Beis Hillel's response to Beis Shammai. Okay, Ella Chana mipankusa yeserta chazia beibishmuel. No. Chana had a very unusual amount of delicacy that she took with Shmuel. She was very careful with Shmuel, and therefore she even though technically she was chayiv, she said, I can't go because I have to take care of my son, because my son can't go, and therefore so she would watch over him. So meaning this pasuk doesn't prove exactly that Beis Hillel is correct over Beis Shammai, because v'chasha beis Shmuel l'chalusha d'orcha, she was concerned that Shmuel would get sick or something on the journey, and therefore at the end of the day you can't derive out of this pasuk that Beis Hillel is correct, that one must be able to hold his father's hands, because if that would have been the case, then clearly she would have let him, right? No, so it must be that this pasuk is not a disproof to Beis Shammai, that in theory one might still be obligated to go, even if they are only able to ride on their father's shoulders. And over here, the reason why Shmuel didn't go was not because of that, but because his mother was more careful with him. Okay, now, weiter. Bai Rebbe Shimon, so Rebbe Shimon asks the following question. Katan chiger ledivrei Beis Shammai, v'sum ledivrei shnehem mahu. When you have a katan, a child, who is lame, right? He can't use his legs. So according to Beis Shammai, is that kid obligated to go up to make Aliyah L'Regel, right? Because that kid, according to Beis Shammai, only needs to be able to ride on his father's shoulders. So is that kid going to be obligated to make Aliyah L'Regel if he can't walk? And says the Gemara further, Sumo L'Devrei Shneim Et Mahu, if you have a blind person, according to both of them, according to Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, if the kid is blind, are they obligated to do Aliyah L'Regel because of Chinuch? Says the Gemara, Hei Echidami, what's the case? We're talking specifically about someone who can't use their legs, and they can never be healed. And we're talking about a blind person who can never be healed from their blindness. So we know that if you are a chiger when you're an adult, and if you're a suma when you're an adult, then you're not going to be able to do then you're not going to be obligated in Aliyah L'Regel. So if you have these conditions, but you are and you are never going to be able to be healed from them, even as a kid. So if as an adult you'd be putter. So of course, even as a kid you'd be putter. Relo tzricha says the Gemara. No, that's not the case we're talking about. We're talking about a case of bechiger sheyachol lehispashet v'suma sheyachol lehispaseach. We're talking about a child who is lame, right? He's not able to use his legs, but he will be healed. By the time he's an adult, he will be healed. And a blind kid, that by the time he's older, he will be healed. So the question is this kid who is in this current state now, if when he's an adult, he will be cured of this, and therefore obligated in the mitzvah of Re'iyah, so is he going to be obligated because of chinuch at this young age when he is not able to do, when he is not able to see, or he's not able to move his legs? So what's the halacha? Amar Abaye, Abaye says, so the Gemara says that the Abaye says that anywhere where a gadol is chayiv midoraisa, if you're going to have a gadol be obligated on a doraisa level, so too that same child you have the obligation to be mechanechim on a derabanan level from a rabbinic perspective. And kol hichad the gadol pater midoraisa, and in any case where a gadol would be exempt from it on a Torah level, so midorabanan katanami pater. So the rabbis would exempt that same child in that situation. So therefore, this katan, you basically have to imagine him as if he's an adult right now. If this kid was an adult right now, what is the halacha? Is he obligated to go? Well, if he's blind or if he is a lame, then he's not obligated to go. So therefore, it says the Gemara that this kid is exempt. If you have a kid, even though he's going to be healed by the time he's an adult, and so therefore he'll need to know how to do the mitzvah, at this point, since he is technically exempt, at this point, since he has these conditions, he is technically exempt, and therefore he's not going to have to go. Next year, let's say he is healed, so he'll have to go. But at this point, if he's still in this condition, he's not obligated to go up to do the Karban Re'iyah. Okay, two dots. We're now in the next part of the Mishnah. The next part of the Mishnah then tells us how much each of these karbanos cost. How much you have to pay for them, right? You have the karban, the olas re'iyah, and you have the shamei chagiga. So says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, Beis Shammai Omrim ha-re'iyah, shtei kesef, right? According to Beis Shammai, the re'iyah is, you have to pay two kesef, and for the chagiga, you just have to pay one kesef, and Beis Hillel has the exact opposite opinion. So Tana Rabbanan, the Rabbis, Tana Rabbisa, Beis Shammai Omrim Hara'iyah Shtei Kesef Achi Giga Me'a Kesef. That the Beis Shammai say that you have to pay two. Well, let's just call it dollars, just for convenience, easiness. But obviously, you're not talking about dollars over here. So Beis Shammai say you have to pay $2 for the Re'iyah, and you have to pay $1 for the Chagiga. Shari'iyah Ola Kula Lagavua Mashin Kim Chagiga. Why is it they have to pay $2, meaning double? You have to pay more for the Re'iyah, for the olas re'iyah than you have to do for the shamei chagiga, because how does a korban ola work? You have to burn the entire thing up. The whole thing goes up to shamayim, and since the whole thing goes up to shamayim, so that's much more valuable. And that's not the case with the shamei chagiga, where you get part of it and Hashem gets part of it. And therefore, as a result, since the olas re'iyah goes up to shamayim, so that's the holier one. Therefore, we say we should spend more money on that. The od matzino ba'tzeres, and so do we have when it comes to the holiday of Shavuos. Shariba behen. What type of sacrifices do we have on Shavuos? Well, we have more Ola sacrifices than we do Shlomim sacrifices, right? Again, Ola sacrifices, all that goes up. Shlomim, you split. Hashem gets a little bit and you get a little bit. And so therefore, so it's clear that the reason why there are more Ola offerings on Shavuos is because those are considered more valuable than the Shlomim offerings in general. Okay. So if that's Beis Shammai's opinion. Beis Hillel, what's Beis Hillel going to say now? They hold the opposite of Beis Shammai, that the Shammai Chagiga you pay $2 for, and the Re'iyah you pay $1 for. Beis Hillel, Omrim ha-Re'iyah, ma'a kesef ha-Chagiga shtei kesef, right? $1 for the Re'iyah, and $2 for the Chagiga. Why? Shechagiga yeshna lifnei hadibor mashein kimeriyah, because the carbon chagiga was specifically brought, the shamei chagiga was brought before Hashem spoke. What does it mean before Hashem spoke? Meaning you ematan Torah. What happened at matan Torah? Klal Yisrael brought a bunch of carbon shamei chagigas, and since they brought a bunch of carbon shamei chagiga, that clearly shows that that is the more valuable carbon. And they did not bring reiyas according to Beis Hillel. The old matzino. Benesim, and so too we have with the Nesim, right, with the princes, when they establish the Mishkan and they dedicate the Mishkan, Shariba Behinakasa Bishlamim Yotarme Baolos, that they bring more Shlamim offerings than they do Ola offerings. And since they bring more Shlamim offerings than they do Ola offerings, then we see over here that clearly Shlamim offerings are better. Therefore, Beis Hillel says you pay more for the Shamech Hagiga than you do for the Olas Re'iyah. Okay, now we're basically going to have lots of back and forth between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Who's right, who's wrong? Beis Hillel, my time alone. Why doesn't Beis Hillel say like Beis Shammai? Meaning Beis Shammai has two good proofs, right? And on the one hand, they say that on Shavuos they bring more Olos offerings, and that the Ola goes all the way up to Shemayim. So those are two good proofs. So why doesn't Beis Hillel hold like that? So Deka Mart Re'iya Adifa De Ola Kula Legavoa, because Beis Hillel will say to Beis Shammai, you said that the Re'iya is better than the Ola because the whole Ola goes up to Hashem. But says Beis Hillel, Adarabba. Chagiga adifa, the carbon chagiga is better. The is bashtei achilos, right? The carbon re'iyah, the olas re'iyah, only has one person eating it. Kiviyachol, Hashem is the only one eating it. When it comes to the carbon shamei chagiga, you have two people eating it. Hashem is eating it, and the Jewish nation is eating it. Therefore, clearly the shamei chagiga is more important. The dekah amart neilat meatzeres done in mekarban yachad mekarban yachad ve'in done in mekarban yachad mekarban sibur. And you also brought a proof from Shavuos. He said on Shavuos we bring more olos than we do shlamim. So therefore, it shows that olos are better. It says no. Beis Hillel, that doesn't make any sense. Beis Hillel says that we should judge a karban yachad from another karban yachad, and we should judge a karban yachad from a karban sibur. Meaning you judge individual karbanos from what from other individual korbanos, and you judge but you do not judge individual korbanos from communal korbanos. So the shavuos sacrifices, those are communal sacrifices. So don't bring a proof from a communal sacrifice to an individual sacrifice, because the korban re'iyah and the korban shel mechagiga, these are individual sacrifices. So don't bring a proof from the communal sacrifices to these. They work on totally different playing fields. So that's Beis Hillel. That's how Beis Hillel gets out of Beis Shammai's proofs. Well, how does Beis Shammai get out of Beis Hillel's proofs? Beis Shammai, my time alone, make a Beis Hillel. How come they don't see like Beis Hillel? The kamar chagiga adifa diyeshen lefi hadibor. Says Beis Shammai, you said a second ago, Beis Hillel, that the Chagiga is better because that was the korban that was brought before Matan Torah, before Hashem spoke at Har Sinai, but the korban Re'iyah was also brought before Hashem spoke at Har Sinai. So don't give me this. The Deka Amart, we'll explain that further with the Pasuk in a little while. The Deka Amart, Neilef Minisim, Danin Davar Hanoeg Ledoros, Medavar Hanoeg Ledoros, Vein Danin Davar Hanoeg Ledoros, Medavar Sheino Noeg Ledoros. We should judge, so when it comes to the proof that you brought from the princes, that the princes all brought up more shlamim offerings than they did olos offerings. He said, so Beis Shammai say, no, we only can judge one korban that's brought throughout all the generations from another korban that's brought throughout all the generations. But the korbanos of the Nesim, that was something that only happened in that generation. So you can't judge a korban that's brought for all generations from a korban that was only brought in one generation. Ubeis Hila, Maishnach, Yigiga, Deeshna, Lefnei Adibor. So now we're going to get really complicated. So again, so Beis Shammai gave their opinion as to why they say that you have to pay double for an olas re'iyah than you do for a shalmei chagiga. And Beis Hillel said, they gave their reason for why they hold the opposite of Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel explained why they don't follow Beis Shammai's reasoning, and Beis Shammai explained why they don't hold like Beis Hillel's reasoning. Now, we're going to keep going back and forth. Beis Hillel, Maishna chagiga, Diyeshna lefein adibor. So what's going on according to Beis Hillel, who they said that only the korban chagiga was brought before Matan Torah? So how do they get to that when Beis Shammai just said a second ago that clearly the re'iyah is also brought? So how does Beis Hillel get away with only saying that only the korban chagiga was brought? Because it says the pasuk dechtiv v'yizbechu zvachim shlamim. Because the pasuk says that and they slaughtered shlamim sacrifices. So that's Beis Hillel's proof. But re'iyah nami haksiv. But the pasuk says they also brought re'iyah because it says haksiv v'yalu olos. They brought up olos. So how does Beis Hillel get around this? Kasavrei Beis Hillel ola sheikribu yisrael v'amidbar. Olas tamid havai, because Beis Hillel says no. You know, you want to know what sort of ola offering they brought? They brought an olas tamid, right? They brought the regular tamid offering. So if they brought the regular tamid offering, so you can't say that how great the tamid offering is, and therefore the re'iyah is more important. No, it happens to be that the korban re'iyah and the korban tamid are both two types of the same korban, which is called the korban ola. But nonetheless, what they brought that day was shalmei chagiga, right? And an olas tamid. So you can't bring a proof from the olas tamid to the olas re'iyah, right? So, okay, so Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai savrei, olas she'ekribu yishra b'midbar olas re'iyah havai. So that's the root of the machlokas. Beis Shammai hold that the sacrifice that was brought was the olas re'iyah. So let's take a step back for a second, because this is only going to get a little bit more technically complicated. So again, so at Matan Torah, right before Matan Torah, the question is, what sort of sacrifices were brought? Everyone agrees that they brought shalmei chagiga, and the machlokas is what sort of ola offering they brought. Do they bring an olas tamid, or do they bring an olas re'iyah? Now, if you take a further step back, that doesn't make any sense. Why are they bringing re'iyah and chagiga offerings? This is not a chag, so why are they bringing these different types of offerings? So the first basically explained that chagiga and re'iyah offerings were brought because of the fact that this was like a festival, this was like a holiday because of all the exciting things that were happening. Now we'll see that the korban, according to some, the korban re'iyah that was brought, if it was indeed a korban re'iyah, it wasn't like the korban re'iyah that we had later on in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. So again, at the end of the day, everyone agrees they brought shalmei chagiga. The question is what the ola was. Was it an olas re'iyah or was it an olas tamid? If we say it's an olas tamid, then you can't bring a proof that the olas that the ola was more important. Clearly, shalmei chagiga was more important, and therefore that proves Beis Hillel's point. But if you say that they brought specifically an olas re'iyah, then you see also that this can't be a proof for Beis Hillel, and that's how Beis Shammai holds that latter idea, and Beis Hillel holds the former idea. Okay, so good. So Beis Hillel says that it's a korban tamid, and Beis Shammai says no, it's a korban re'ia. Amar Abaye Beis Shammai Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shishmal Ku Svir Lehu Ola Sheikri Bulishal Medbar Olas Re'ia Havai. So now we're gonna basically say there are lots of people who hold like either opinion. So according to Beis Shammai, we said he holds that it's a korban tamid. So who else holds that it's a korban tamid? Well, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shishmal, they all hold that the sacrifice of the Jewish people brought in the desert before Matan Torah, they all hold that it was a korban re'iyah. Ubeis Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yossi Aglili. All these opinions, Beis Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, kulhu svira lehu ola shekribu Yisrael b'midbar olas tamid havai. They all hold and they all agree the sacrifice that was brought before Matan Torah was the korban tamid. Now the Gemara is going to go through each of these six opinions to help us understand how we know that each of them hold what we just said they hold. So again, Beis Shammai, Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Yishmael all hold that it's a korban re'iyah, and Beis Hillel, Rabbi Kiva, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili all hold that it's a korban tamid. Okay, so how do we know this? Beis Shammai Hadamran. Beis Shammai, we know that he holds that it's a korban re'iyah because we just explained the proof that he said that, because the Gemara said it explicitly. Rabbi Yishmael, Ditanya. How do we know that Rabbi Yishmael holds that it's a korban re'iyah? Because the Braisa says, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Klalos v'ne Emru b'Sinai. So now we're going on to Vavim Beis. Upratos be'ohel moed. So what does this mean? So this means that there were generalizations taught at Har Sinai, and the specifics were taught later on in the ohel moed. So in other words, when the Torah was given, was the whole Torah given at Har Sinai? No. The whole Torah was not given at Har Sinai. The general rules were all given at Har Sinai, but the specifics were later on then given in the ohel moed, in the Tent of Meeting, in the Mishkan. Now, what does that have to do with anything? Well, the klal would be that there's an obligation to bring a sacrifice. The prat would be the specifics of that sacrifice, what you have to do to deal with that sacrifice. So therefore, Rabbi Yishmael says that the general rules were given at Har Sinai, but the specifics were given later on at the Ohel Moed, and therefore, since the specifics were given later on, if this let's say this more slowly. Rabbi Yishmael holds the following idea, that the general rules were given at Har Sinai, and the specifics were given later on. If that's the case, now you have to assess, is it the korban re'iyah that was brought, or was it the korban tamid that was brought? So says Rabbi Yishmael, if it was the korban tamid, why would that be a problem? Because the korban tamid, we bring that every single day, and there's no way that we'd be allowed to switch it up from how we brought it back then to how we still continue to bring it this day in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, if the general rules were given at Har Sinai, that means they could have only brought the korban generally, but they cannot have done the specifics, which means, therefore, that they could have, they cannot have brought the tamid, because if they would have brought it, that means they would not have been able to do all the specifics that apply to it. And therefore, it must be, says Rabbi Yishmael, that they brought the korban re'iyah at Har Sinai, because they are able to do something like that. They are able to bring the korban without doing the specific rules, because Rabbi Yishmael would basically say that the korban re'iyah does not, it's okay to not have done the specifics back then. I know it's a little complicated, but bear with me. Okay, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Klalos Upratos, Namru Basinai, Vinishnu Ba'ohel Moed, Vinishtalshu Ba'arbos Moav. Rabbi Akiva says, I disagree with you, Rabbi Shmuel. I say that the Klalos and the Pratos, the general rules and the specific rules, were all given at Har Sinai, and then they were given a second time in the Ohel Moed, that they were given a third time in the plains of Moab. So these things were taught three times. Both of them were taught three times in all these different places. And therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, since the specifics were also given at Har Sinai, that means you would be able to bring the Korban Tamid back before Matan Torah. Okay, and if you would have thought to say that the ola that was brought before Matan Torah was the korban tamid, miika midi demiikara lo by hefshet v'nituach ulevasof by hefshet v'nituach. Right, so this is now going back on Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, if you would have thought that the ola that the Jewish people brought in the desert was the tamid offering, well, how could that be? Because that means from the beginning you would have had to be, because from the beginning you have to be doing the korban tamid in the correct way, and you clearly were not doing the hefshet and the nituach Pilach. Those are the specifics. That's the skinning and the dismemberment that you do for the Karbanos. So that means how would you be able to do at the beginning with the Karban Tamid, not to do these things, and then only in the end, then later on, you would then go back to doing them. That can't be. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yishmael, that's why we said that he holds it must be a Karban Re'iyah, and it could not have been a Karban Tamid. Rabbi Elazar, what about Rabbi Elazar's opinion? What was Rabbi Elazar? Rabbi Elazar was the third opinion who said that it was the Karban Re'iyah that was brought before Matan Torah and not the Karban Tamid. So Rabbi Elazar did Tanya. How do we know this? Olas Tamid Ha'asuya Bahar Sinai. Because he says that the Pasuk, he quotes a Pasuk in a Braisa, that the Olas Tamid was made, was Asuya at Har Sinai. What does it mean it was made at Har Sinai? Rabbi Elazar Omer, Ma'aseha Ne'emru Basinai V'hi'atzma Lo Kara. It means to teach us that the practice of how the Karban Tamid is brought, that was told to us at Har Sinai, but not the actual sacrifice itself. That was not brought. So therefore we see that if we're specifically saying that it was taught how to be given, but not that it was actually brought at Har Sinai, therefore what's the other option? It must be that a Karban Re'iyah was brought. Okay, fine. So now we explained Rabbi Yishmael, we explained Beis Shammai, and we explained Rabbi Elazar. We explained also Beis Hillel, as we said. Now the Gemara says Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, Omer Karva Veshuv Lo Pascha. Rabbi Akiva says no, the Karban Tamid was actually brought at Har Sinai, and since the day of Har Sinai that it was brought, it never stopped being brought. They always brought the Karban Tamid every single day after that. Elamani Makayim, but how could that be, says Rabbi Akiva, because we know that in the desert, that what happens, the Pasuk says, Hazvachim Umincha Higashtim Li B'midbar Arbaim Shana Beis Yisrael, that the sacrifices and the Mincha offerings, Hashem says that you in the desert, you held them back from me. You didn't bring these sacrifices. So if that's what it says, then how do we know that they brought the Tamid nonstop throughout the desert, throughout the 40 years? Shivtu shal Levi shalo avdu avodah zarah heinu krivu osa, because they were the ones who actually, because the tribe of Levi, they brought the Karban Tamid every single day throughout the 40 years in the desert. Fine. So now we explained Rabbi. Now we have Rabbi Akiva's opinion, and we have now Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel hadamran. So we explained Beis Hillel's opinion already, as we said on the previous Amud. Rabbi Akiva had nami damran. Rabbi Akiva, we also explained his opinion just above, and we have one final opinion left. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who we also said that the Karban that was brought was the Olas Tamid. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the tiny Rabbi Yossi Aglili, says in a Braisa, Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, that Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, Shalosh mitzvos nitztavu yishal ba'olasam l'regel re'iya v'chagiga v'simcha. We're commanded three mitzvos. When the Jewish people go up to do Aliyah L'Regel, we're commanded three mitzvos. One of them is the Karban Re'iyah, another is the Karban Chagiga, and the other is the Karban Simcha. Yesh b'Re'iyah she'in b'shtehen, v'yesh b'chagiga she'in b'shtehen, yesh b'simcha she'in b'shtehen. Says the Gemara, there are for each of these sacrifices, there is something that applies to them that doesn't apply to the other two. So there's something that's special that applies to the Re'iyah that doesn't apply to the other two. There's something special that applies to the Chagiga that doesn't apply to the other two. And there's something special that applies to the Simcha that doesn't apply to the other two. Yesh b'Re'iyah she'in b'shtehen. There's something that applies to the Re'iyah that doesn't apply to the other two. Shehare'iyah Ola kula l'gavoah. Because the Re'iyah goes up entirely to heaven. We burn the entire thing. Mashein kein b'shtehen, which is not true with the other two. Yish b'chagiga mashein b'shtehen, shachagiga yeshna lefnei adibor mashein b'shtehen. Because the chagiga, says the Gemara, that this was specifically brought before Matan Torah, and the other two were not brought before Matan Torah. Yish b'simcha mashein b'shtehen. There's something that applies to the simcha that doesn't apply to the other two. Shasimcha no heges b'anashim u'v'nashim mashein b'shtehen. Because the simcha applies to both men and women, but that doesn't apply to the other two. Now it's interesting because the carbon itself does not apply to women, but the happiness, the general rule that one is obligated to be happy on a chag, that applies to both men and women. So that applies to simcha and not to the other two. But says the Gemara, Rabbi Yishmael, my time. Therefore, says the Gemara, doesn't explain it. We have to explain and understand it. That you see from here that what was the thing that was brought before Matan Torah? What's the carbon that was brought before Matan Torah? The carbon chagiga. And the Gemara specifically says that the carbon chagiga was brought before Matan Torah, excluding the other two. And therefore, what's one of those two that were excluded? The Re'iyah. Therefore, it must mean that the Re'iyah was not brought at Har Sinai, and therefore it must be that the Karban Tamid was brought at Har Sinai. That explains all six opinions, those three that hold that it was a Karban Tamid, and those three that hold that it was a Karban Re'iyah. Now, weiter. Rabbi Yishmael, my time akam mukmas leike Beis Shammai. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, why, what would he say now, that, Yeah, right. So Rabbi Shmuel. So why is it that it was established like why did he hold like Beis Shammai? Ichsakadetach olas shekribu Yisrael b'Midbar olas tamid havai mika midi demeikara lo by hefshet v'nituach losof by hefshet v'nituach. So Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, his whole idea was that it can't be that the tamid offering was the one that was brought before Matan Torah, because if that was the case, can you really have something that starts at the beginning that you do it the wrong way and then you do it the right way later on, meaning the Korban Tamid, they must have brought it without the specifics, without the hefshet and the nituach, without the skinning and the dismemberment, and later on they must have added it. So that Rabbi Shmuel says, because of that, it must be that they did not bring the Tamid, it must be that they actually brought the Re'iyah. Right? So and according to Rabbi Yossi, why does that same issue not apply? Meaning, so says the Gemara. So Rabbi Yossi would have that same problem as Rabbi Shmuel. Hakamar, according to Rabbi Yossi, does that same issue not apply? That because in theory Rabbi Yossi Aglili would hold that could hold that the specifics were not taught at Har Sinai, and therefore since the specifics were not taught, then according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, then that means they would not have been doing the Karban Tamid right. So how could it be, according to Rabbi Yosef Lili, that they would not have been doing the Karban Tamid right at Har Sinai, and then only later on fixing it to do it the right way? Because according to Rabbi Yossi, says the Braisa, that the obligation to do the skinning and the dismemberment, that only applies from when it was commanded at the Ohel Moed. And since it was not commanded before that, so it does not apply, and so he therefore has no issue. So therefore, Sami Mikan Rabbi Shmuel. So therefore, you can delete over here Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. Meaning, says the Gemara, that because Rabbi Yossi Aglili had a way to slug up Rabbi Yishmael's opinion, so we can get rid of Rabbi Yishmael's opinion and not count him as one of the opinions that agrees with the opinion of Beis Shammai. Okay, I know it's complicated, guys. Let's do a few more lines, though, today. So the pasuk that all of this has been based on is the pasuk that says, that he sent the youth of Bnei Israel, and they brought up Olos, and it also says that they slaughtered Shlamim. So says the Gemara, Rav Chista wants to know, how do we read the Pasuk? Is the Pasuk read that the Ola offerings that they brought up were Kivasim, and that the Shlamim offerings that they brought up were Parim? Or is it that both of the Shlamim offerings, or is it that both the Ola offerings and the Shlamim offerings that were brought, were they both Parim? Were they both cows? And so you'll say, well, isn't the Pasuk being quoted as using the word sheep and cows? So no, if you look at the actual Pasuk, it does not include the word sheep, it only has the word cows. So the way the Pasuk reads is that they brought Shlamim, and they brought Ola offerings, and they brought Shlamim offerings, and they brought and they were cows. And so the question is, were both of them cows, or were one of them cows and the other one was sheep? And the Pasuk did not specifically say if it was sheep. So you'll ask yourself, if you're still paying attention, if you know what's going on, Lamai Nafkamina, who cares? What does it make a difference if they brought sheep or cows? Let them both, whatever the Pasuk says, it's a nice thing, a nice Torah to learn, but what does it actually make a difference if this one brought sheep, if this one brought cows? Says the Mar, no, Marzutra says, Lifsok Tamim. This is actually very relevant because how we break up the Pasuk using the cantillation notes. When we use the Tamim in the Torah, we know that every single Inyan has its own specific cantillation marks. And if you have two Inyanim in one Pasuk, so you have two specific breaks in the Pasuk of different cantillations. But if it's one giant Inyan, then we have one continuous cantillation. And therefore, if this is two Inyanim, then you have to have two separate streams. And if this is one Inyan, then you have to have only one. And so therefore, if both of the Shlamim and the Ola offerings are supposed to be read along, that they were both brought as Parim, they were both brought as cows, then it's one Inyan. But if it was really rather that the Ola offerings were sheep and then the Shlamim offerings were cows, then it's two Inyanim, so you should have to break it up. So that's one practical difference. And then Rav Acha Brei de Rava says, Li Omer, this is relevant for someone who makes the following statement, Hare Alai Ola Ka'ola Shekri Yishal Bamidbar. If someone says to themselves that I am going to bring the Ola offering like the Jewish people brought in the desert before Matan Torah, so my, what sacrifice does he bring? Does he bring Parim Havu or Kibazim Havu? Do they bring cows or do they bring sheep? And therefore, which one would I bring? So therefore, says the Gemara, in all these situations, we have no idea what the Pasuk is saying. Teiku We're going to have to leave it until Eliyahu HaNavi comes, and he'll be the one to explain to us what exactly we're supposed to, which one they brought, if they brought cows for both, or if they brought sheep for one and then cows for the other. But for now, we just have no idea. Anyways, I know that was a very complicated daf with lots of back and forth, so I encourage you to review it all on your own private time, and if you have any questions, let me know. But for now, we'll stop right here, and everyone should have a great night.